Hi, I'm Melanie, and this is Dream Chasers, the podcast where I talk to inspirational Australians about their journeys across the globe to follow their dreams. They're doing big, big things in the big, big smoke. So sit back and join me while I share their trials, their tribulations, their heartbreaks, and their highest moments. It's an awesome ride.
Today, I have a very special guest. Pauline Egan grew up in rural Queensland and went to Canada to star in popular sci-fi dramas. As if that wasn't enough, she then made films with celebrities to save lives. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. That was a very complimentary introduction. It makes me sound way more interesting than I probably really am.
It's an incredible story, actually, and an incredible journey.
Yeah. At the ripe old age of 35 now, I've lived a very full, colourful life so far.
Yeah, fantastic. So just to wind the clock right back, just to get the story of you, I guess. You grew up in rural Queensland on a dairy farm. What would we see and feel if we went there, Pauline?
Dry, dusty, rolly hills, out in an area called Palin Creek. We grew up on a lot of land, so we had a big old house. Our closest neighbour was a couple of kilometres down the road. And, we had the big dairy farm. We had about 130 cattle. As soon as we could walk, we were working on the farm and chasing in the cows. And then once we were tall enough to milk the cows, we did that. We grew up in a very simple environment, and it was just living on the land and we didn't have a lot of things. A lot of toys. So being out on the farm and going and climbing the big fig tree and building little houses in it, that was kind of what our days consisted of in childhood. It was always creating stories and little worlds. Myself and my two older sisters, we used to convert our house into a shopping mall. We had a walk-in pantry. The pantry became the elevator. Two of us would be the set designers. One would go into the elevator and we'd have 5 minutes to change everything around in the house so that when they stepped out of the elevator on level three, they were in a different store. So we had to be very creative.
Excellent. So that's a good fodder for drama and what came later. So it's a farming family. Was your parents into movies and drama back then?
Looking back, I was exposed quite a lot to the theatre and music. My mum founded a musical society called BAMS, which is Amateur Musical Society, way back before I was born. And so they put on musicals in the town. So my mum used to direct them and she used to star in them. Mum's an opera singer as well. She had a beautiful singing voice. So my dad writes bush poetry. And he used to sing old Irish hymns in the dairy. At night when we'd go to bed, you'd hear Dad singing in the dairy or Mum singing opera in the dairy. So there was definitely like creative influence there from a young age.
What sort of things did you watch?
On the farm, we had The Little Mermaid. On special occasions, we might go to the local convenience store, which also doubled as a video rental store in Rathdowney, which was like the nearest town. Which was about 1,000 people. And, we might rent one video for the weekend or something. So I loved Lady and the Tramp. Mum, she shielded us from the Australian soap operas because Mum didn't like that they talked back to their parents.
And what was your first sort of performance?
My mum directed Snow White. I was 5 or thereabouts. Myself and my sisters, like, we all wanted to be on stage, like, with Mum. She's like, okay, well, you can be this animal, or this animal, like, in the enchanted forest or something, She created roles for us, basically. And she gave me the coveted role of the evil queen's black cat. Again, didn't exist, but she created that. I was mortified because, like, I didn't want to be bad. So I bawled my eyes out and I was like, I don't want to be evil. So I got to be a bee in the forest. That was my first exposure to being on stage. I was so shy, though. After that, I started learning ballet, jazz, and a little bit of tap through a local teacher in our small town. And so started learning piano at seven, classical piano. I mean, I still play now. The first proper musical that I had a leading role in was a school play, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah.
And it was a comedy, and I was playing like a Carmen Miranda type character in that. So that was fun. Small town theater. It wasn't any crazy big productions in my childhood or teens.
Fast forwarding a little bit. So at age 22, you went to the Australian Film and Television Academy. What sort of a person were you back then, having come from that small town environment originally?
When I left high school, I joined a dance troupe in Brisbane doing performances at big events. So we'd sometimes do like a carnival theme where we'd have the big headdresses and things like that. That's when I was like 19, 20. And at the same time, I was also studying at universities. We started to get asked to dance in music video clips. And so I started to do a couple of music video clips where we'd be like the backup dancers. That was my first exposure to the technical world of on camera stuff, the way that it all came together, the lights, the camera work, the sound and the set, just creating this immortal moment that you can never erase. It just fascinated me, given my pretty simple upbringing. Then I decided, oh, maybe I want to, you know, explore this film TV world. So I got an agent. I did a couple of short films, both shot on the Gold Coast, and I just had like a very small bit part. I think it was a waitress in one and a news reporter in another one, all still Queensland. And it seemed to go well. After I started doing that, I realized that, well, I really need training. The Australian Film and Television Academy, like their head office is in Sydney, but they came up to Brisbane to do a week intensive course. For that week, they had some of really well-known directors from like Home and Away and different Australian films. They had casting directors like Tom McSweeney, really like opened up my eyes. After that, I went on to continue to study with Tom McSweeney on the Gold Coast. He had an office out of Warner Brothers Studios. Tom is American. When we did the classes with Tom, he would really hone in on our accent skills. If we chose to try to do the American accent, he would pull us up on our bad habits. I think I studied with him for at least a year, maybe more. And so that helped me be prepared for when I eventually went overseas and started working in American productions.
So you moved to Canada, I think it was 2010. Mm-hmm. So where were you at when you decided to move?
I had fallen in love with a Canadian man. Well, he was a man. He was 25. You call him a man. and he wasn't from the film industry at all. He was a Mountie, a police officer on the east coast of Canada. He was from a small town too. So we'd met in Australia, been together for a couple of years. And I wanted to see the world. I'd never been anywhere except Fiji. I started talking about wanting to go to a larger city to try to really have a go at film and TV. He was wanting to go back home and see his family. And so we started to think about going over there for a visit. And I started to look up Vancouver specifically because it was on the West Coast and it was the warmest part of Canada. And it was a part of Canada that he hadn't seen either. So we thought maybe we'd go to the East Coast, see his family, and then go on an adventure. And when I looked up the film industry there, I saw a slew of activity, and so much of it was like American TV shows. One of my favorite shows by then was Supernatural. Supernatural was actually not shot in America. It was shot in Canada. So then I was like, wow, Canada might be a really smart move, because I'd looked at how hard it was to get a visa for the US and how expensive it was. And then I looked at a visa for Canada and it was like a couple of $100s and it came through in a couple of days versus many thousands of dollars and a long, lengthy process for the US. So we made an educated decision to give it a go. Yeah, so we moved out to Vancouver just before the Winter Olympic Games. That city was just alive. It was a cool welcome into Canada. Then miraculously got my first part, maybe a month after we arrived, which was in Sanctuary, Canadian sci-fi series, where I played a British doctor slash werewolf. The plan was never to stay for many, many years. The plan was let's have a go for 6 months, maybe a year, and then come back to Australia. I then got a guest star in Supernatural, which was a really cool thing. So like I said, that was one of my favorite shows. A couple of months after I'd left Australia, I was on the show. Went in totally blind. I guess I carried myself with confidence and made it look like I knew what I was doing. I just went with it. I've always been like that a little bit. I just kind of have thrust myself into the unknown and just know that I'll figure it out.
So did you feel like you'd achieved all you ever wanted with those really popular shows and those roles?
While I was having some success with film and TV, I was still being pulled to this other dream that I've had from very young, which was to work in remote Africa. Like, I had this other side of me that needs to give back. So then I sort of started exploring that.
And we'll get to that in a little bit because I reckon that's amazing. But in 2014, you went behind the camera to write and start creating films. Why did you decide to go behind the camera after that success being on Supernatural and other shows?
My first year in Vancouver was really great. And then it just started to go quiet the second year. All of a sudden you get this awesome opportunity and then you think, oh, sweet, that was easy. You know, now I'm going to be working in TV shows. And that's not the nature of this business at all. You're hot one minute and you're not the next. Mm-hmm. Things can change in a flash. So what ended up happening was we came back to Australia. A couple of months went past and we're both twiddling our fingers going, that was kind of fun, even though it was really hard. It was a grind in Vancouver because it's an expensive city and, you know, it was hard to get like part-time work. You know, the minimum wage there was $8.50 an hour and I was working as a hostess in a restaurant as a side job. It wasn't glamorous by any stretch. But then, yeah, we were just like, yeah, let's give it another shot. So we went back. So this would be like 2012 now. And the industry was still kind of wishy-washy. There'd been a writer's strike in there. There'd also been tax credits that shifted from Vancouver to Toronto. And so a lot of the work went east. And like I said to you before, that the original draw for me to film was like all the technical stuff and how it all comes together. And really that's the eye of a director and a producer, right? So I guess I kind of always had that passion in there that I just hadn't really explored. So I decided that since things were a bit quiet, why wouldn't I actually try to tell my own story for the first time? I'd been working on all these other projects, which were other people's stories, which were important to tell. And I felt, you know, the actor has a good role or an important role in portraying that person's story authentically. But there's a totally different experience when it's your own story or a message that you wanted to send out to the world. And so I had an idea that had kind of been brewing for a little while, and I decided that I should just take the risk and jump off the cliff and try writing, directing and producing. And so I did, and that was Through the Pain, the black and white silent film.
Yeah, and this is interesting because that silent film was about lonely people communicating through a window. That's the way it's written up online anyway. Why did you want to write about people that are lonely and connecting through a window?
Excellent question. When you are throwing everything on the line and moving to the other side of the world where you are completely anonymous, it is isolating. Yes, I had my boyfriend at the time, but we have had our own personal struggles in that, you know. It's really hard on a relationship to be the only support for the other person. It's not how we operate in a healthy way. We need to have community. So I found in the early years of living in Vancouver that it was quite a isolating experience. It rained a lot in that city. It was cold. People were indoors a lot and closed off a lot. And maybe it was the weather. People were not so open at welcoming you into their communities or their circles. Like, it took a long time, but then once I got there, it was beautiful. And I now have an amazing community there that I will always call one of my homes. But in that time, I was literally sitting by my window, and my piano, my keyboard was by a window, and I would sit there and play, looking out at the rain and the dark and feeling quite lonely, and looking straight into like the building opposite me and just thinking, we're all right here, yet we're all disconnected. I feel so surrounded yet so alone. And it was also the symbolism of the windows. It's a lot about the assumptions that we make about other people when we only see a window into their life. Now, that translates into social media now. It was symbolic of that as well, that you see someone's post on Facebook or Instagram and, yeah, sure, you're seeing like the highlights and you think that they've got, you know, the best life or they're happy and not lonely. I'd had a couple of experiences maybe at that time where people had made assumptions about me.
In what way?
Like, people would think like because you did a TV show or that you were really wealthy or that you didn't have struggles with your identity or with your self-confidence and self-esteem. And it's like, that's not true. All of those things are just human, the human experience. And so I just felt like anyone who could see this film could really receive this message in a positive light and maybe think differently when they go to judge somebody else without knowing them.
Then after that, there was The Wall. This was an award-winning Canadian film. It was actually about an explosive, unfaithful marriage and a wife that walked out. Why did you want to write about such a thing?
It's weird, the timing of art with life. That was my friend Daniel Baker, who wrote it and directed it. When he'd written the film, he'd been in his previous relationship, which I guess was a bit explosive, and there was some resentment there. And when he approached me, he said, look, I don't feel fire anymore because, you know, the anger's gone. I've let that relationship go and I'm actually really happy in a relationship now. So I don't know what to do with this story. And so I wanted to help him tell this story that he just wanted to be out in the world. He was like done with it. He wanted to stop thinking about it. He just wanted to make it. So I was like, let's just make it. I was starting to have some like difficulties in my own personal relationship, not really in the themes of that film, but there was some resentment building and there was definitely some anger in there. And so weirdly, the argument, which ended up being the end of my relationship in real life, happened during the filming of that film.
You're joking. So, wow.
No, it was pretty crazy, actually, how it all came to a head and what we were shooting during the day and then what was happening in my real personal life at the time. Yeah, it was a really challenging time. So I was happy to sort of get behind another budding filmmaker to support them and lift them up, you know.
And just do it, because that sounds like your style, just do it kind of thing.
Yes, just do it. And also, I don't have a competitive bone in my body. It's almost like a sick pleasure I get out of like helping other people succeed, because like someone helped me and I have a duty to now help somebody else. That's something that I just think about with everything I do in life. It's like someone gave you a chance. Someone gave you a bit of encouragement or a leg up, and you've got to keep paying it forward.
And speaking of paying it forward, it's a good segue into the next interesting chapter of your life, because these films were followed by a documentary on the reality of the global water crisis that involved actress Sharon Stone. So can you tell us about that documentary and your role in it?
I was still having that pull to do the humanitarian work and I wanted to be in Africa. That pull was getting stronger and stronger and stronger as I was in Canada. When I made Through the Pain, it got into the Hollywood Film Festival at the Arclight Theatre in Hollywood, which is like an iconic theatre. My little film that I made in the same theatre that you see all the Oscar-winning movies in. We couldn't afford a trip from Vancouver to LA, but everything in me said, you have to go. I managed to scrape together enough for the flights. On opening night of the film festival, I saw My Name is Water, and it was this guy's journey around the world looking for his purpose and ending up in Africa. And I went, I have to see this. It had just started, and so I ran in, ended up in the front row, and when I watched it, I knew that that's actually why I made my short film. I had to make that film, end up at this festival to see this film, to meet the guy who made this documentary. So after the film, there was a Q&A, and Sharon Stone was there, and the filmmaker, Justin. I spoke to Justin and said, look, I've been wanting to work in Africa my whole life. I've studied nursing. Are you doing anything with your projects in Africa that you could use my skills with? And he said they'd been looking for someone to create a health program to go with the clean water projects that they were doing. I knew that that wasn't the end of the conversation, but I also had a life in Canada. And at the time, I a fiance. I wasn't able to just up and go to Africa. But what ended up happening was I won the green card lottery. I ended up moving to LA. When I moved to LA, I remembered meeting this guy at this festival and thought, gee, I'm ready for that personal journey, because I'd kind of once again thrown caution to the wind, and this time I was alone going from Canada to LA because my relationship had ended. And so I threw my hands up to the higher power and said, I'm ready. So it was one phone call, and I said, when do we leave? Let's do it. So I ended up a couple of months after moving to LA, I ended up on a plane to Mozambique with this guy, Justin. I ended up becoming co-director of this organization. And during following years, we were filming a lot. So we ended up doing a re-edit of his original documentary and adding in the development of the charity called Water Underground, which I helped build with him. And so it ended up being version 2.0 of the original My Name is Water documentary. So the one that's on iTunes now is the one that I helped co-produce. But it's weird, I saw it first and produced it later.
Yeah, wow. And so all of this, putting a philosopher's hat on, I mean, you've been in rural Queensland, you've been in Vancouver, Los Angeles, and then Africa. What has this taught you about human nature?
It's reinstilled in me, I guess, what was instilled in me from childhood, which was that the most important thing is family and helping other humans. My time in Africa, that looks you right in the face, because you're working with these families, and especially the women, who are giving all of themselves every day just to provide for their families and collect water from the river kilometers away, and really giving all of themselves, and children who have no toys, but they are the happiest, most content children you'll ever meet. And they have a toy car made out of Coke cans, that they've made themselves. The beautiful raw human connection is what binds us all. And when we lose that, we really aren't living at all.
And what are you doing now? What's on the agenda at the moment?
Yeah, so at the moment I am in rural Queensland again. I came back 2 months ago, and I'm looking after my two parents at the moment. My mum has Alzheimer's and my dad's been unwell. I was in Canada. I just wrapped on a TV show there, and then this happened with my dad. So I dropped everything, got on a plane and came here. But I am involved in another organization now called Face Africa, and we do clean water and sanitation projects in Liberia and Kenya. Now the focus is on rural communities there, which don't have a chance at really surviving COVID-19 if it infiltrates, because they don't have clean water or soap. So you can't wash your hands. Yeah. So I'm still trying to make sure that we can help families who really need it over there. And then, yeah, I mean, I'm watching to see what the film industry does. If things are okay here with my parents, I won't leave until they are. And I just think this is a time to like observe and reconnect with yourself and to your roots. And from that, I think beautiful art will come. But for me, I'm on the moments that I've tried to sort of force that, like, oh, I should be writing something at nighttime when I go to bed. I should be, you know, I should be. And I'm just not really listening to that anymore. And I'm just going with what feels right for right now. And what feels right for right now is being present here with my family, caring for them, and my experiences with my mom and mortality sort of staring me in the face. Those things are definitely sparking some important feelings that have to come out in art at some point. I'm having flashes of inspiration of maybe writing a movie that involves Alzheimer's and the moments that I have with my mom. I want to tell stories that may otherwise be lost and that need to be told before it's too late.
Is there a dream project that you would just love to do, you know, like a role that you would love to play? Or
I would really love to do a period piece. I think there's a lot mm-hmm. of stories from the past that haven't been told from what women went through during the war. I would like to put a spotlight on the resilience and insurmountable strength that women have. I waver between documentary and narrative, but I think I might find a happy medium telling true stories, but in a narrative artistic way. I want to score a major motion picture. My piano, I've written so many songs, and the music that I write is very cinematic, especially after seeing the winner this year was a woman at the Oscars for Best Original Score. That was like calling me out to listen to that side of me that's like always there.
I reckon that, you know, maybe a musical biopic of your life would be so fascinating for so many people. It's amazing. And just with all that you've done and all that you've seen, what are your parting tips for people that maybe want to achieve their dreams, whatever they might be, in a nutshell?
Follow what you think your dream is, but don't be married to that being your dream, because you may discover along the road to your dream, inverted commas, that your dream is actually on a different path. Rigidity is the enemy of success, in my opinion, and rigidity is the enemy of happiness. To think that you have to do this, 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 and this to get there is not realistic, in my opinion. I also don't believe that happiness is a destination, you know. It's just a way of being, and I hope for everybody that they get to find themselves every day in a place where they feel happy in that present moment with who they are and what they stand for in their life. And you can't measure that. It's just a feeling.
Beautifully poignant advice, I must say. And where can somebody see some of the films that you've made?
I have a website, PauleneEgan.com. You can read about Face Africa, like my humanitarian stuff. You can also see some behind the scenes clips from my acting and filmmaking stuff as well.
So thank you very much for joining me today. That was Pauline Egan there. She grew up in rural Queensland and she went to Canada, became an actress, filmmaker, and crossed paths with celebrities to raise awareness of issues around the world. And this has been Dream Chasers with Melanie. Thank you very much.